So what we did so far is the Mishnah, which begins on Kufches, on the base, and ends on Kuftes, on the Aleph. Now, I'm trying to see how we can juggle our time today, because we need to know the Mishnah in order to start the Gemara, but on the other hand, to review the Mishnah might take us the full hour that we have. So what I'll try to do is just focus on one part of the Mishnah, which you'll see here on the bottom of Kuf Ches on the Beis. It's about three lines up from the bottom, and just that'll give us the springboard towards understanding the Gemara, hopefully. And the case is that the Gazlan who took a Shvua and was Modeh to the fact that he took a Shvua died. And what do we do as far as the Keren, Chomesh, and Oshem are concerned? In the case of, let's say, if the Gazlan died, so we've discussed it on many occasions that the sons did not have to pay Chomesh and Oshem, if we assume that Chomesh is a kapara. But here's a case where the Nigzal died, correct? So Hagozel es Aviv v'nishbalo. Now here's a case where the son stole from his father. That's a tragic situation. Okay, now his father dies. Now in this case, the son, insofar as he not only stole from his father, but he also took a shvua to that effect that he denied that he stole it, and now he admits, he confesses his crime, he has to pay a keren chomesh v'yashem, but now his father is dead. On the one hand, he himself could inherit his father. On the other hand, if that be the case, then he really hasn't paid anything, and he's still holding on to the keren chomesh and yashem. Well, the yashem, okay, that's fine. He can bring the korban yashem. That's not an issue. But does he pay the Keren V'chomesh? And if so, to whom does he pay? So it works like this. The Mishnah establishes that if there are other Yarshim, that means he has brothers, then he pays the other Yarshim. If he doesn't have any other Yarshim, then he pays to the Kohen. And we're going to discuss that in Mirtz Hashem at great length. Now, the Mishnah has a strange statement here. This is a statement that we skipped last time. Let's see if we can try to fit it in today. Im eino rotze, o she'en lo, love, ubalei chov boim v'nifroim. And what does this mean? So there's a way in which, under certain situations, again, it's not the language of the Mishnah says im eino rotze, meaning for some reason we have to understand why the Mishnah is giving the Gazlan an option to circumvent the loss of these funds, meaning there's a way in which he can get away with paying for this, or at least the total sum of money.
This is if there are other Yarshim?
Let's assume there are other Yarshim, correct. So we're not talking about the case where he has to pay the Kohen, we're talking about the case where he has to pay the other Yarshim. And how does he circumvent this payment? Again, we're not answering the question right now. Keep that question in the back burner. Is why the Mishnah is offering this option. Okay? But let's say he's poor, whatever it might be, the Mishnah offers what we call a harama almost. Harama means there's a way of circumventing this payment. What do you say?
Subterfuge.
Okay, that's an interesting word. So how do we do this? So what happens is that he borrows money to the tune of this hashava. In other words, to the amount of money that he would have to pay in order to fulfill his chiyuv hashavah. It's called karen v'chom. So whatever that money amounts to, he borrows. Okay. Now, when he takes this money that he borrowed and he pays his sons, his brothers, then now the malve, the one who lended the money, has a right to collect that money back. So he's going to collect from the brothers that sum of money. And what turns out is that through that subterfuge, if you call it that, he gained something. What does he gain? Because he borrowed money, correct? Let me just read to you the words. He says, Balchov, Balechov, it says in plural. Okay, Boyin v'nifroi me'achim eschelko bi'osa shova. Okay. Klomar imhoyilo shnei achim. Okay, this is a summary of Rashi. Meshiv lahem es hamamon. Ubaleachov notli mehem es shlish hamamon shehu chelko bi oso mamon. In other words, although he, the Gazlan, deserves, so to speak, to pocket one third of this payment, because he deserves one third of the Yerusha, let's say, we'll forget about Bechar now, but let's say there are three brothers and there's no Bechar, so each one gets a third. He deserves to be able to pay this one third and get it back, right? Because he pays it towards the father, so to speak, meaning to pay the Aveda. And then he still has a Shem Yoresh, and he still has a right to get that money back, at least that third of the money back. But we can't allow him to pocket that money, because then he never got it out of his Rishus. So what we do is, we get it out of his Rishus in a way that he'll recollect that money, but not directly by not paying it, but by collecting it from the Balchov. So again, do we have the mechanics of it?
No.
Let me go over the mechanics of it. He's going to borrow the money. Let's say that we'll call the money three shekels, whatever it might be, correct? He takes the three shekels and he uses it to pay his brother. So he has now paid up that chelek of the Yerusha that he would rather pocket for himself, because he has rights to inherit it, but he can't do so because of the halacha of Hashavas HaGzela, which requires that he cough up the money that he owes for this Gzela. But he's going to get that money back. How is he going to get that money back into his pocket? Because what the Balei Chov are going to do is, they're going to collect two-thirds of that money back from the Yarshim, and that third, they're not going to collect. So in effect, he doesn't have to pay back the Balchov for that third.
Why are they collecting it back from the Yarshim? Why aren't they collecting it all back from him? He borrowed it.
Because he's penniless.
Right.
Yeah, but he borrowed...
Right, but since that money was given to the Yarshim...
By him... But it's metaltalin.
Ah, you mean it's metaltalin.
Yeah.
Ah, let's just think about that. If it's metaltalin... I think that's what Tosus is trying to answer this question. You see, Tosus didn't ask a lova. Not sure how he does this. Shiyeh lova momen ala karka shalo. Just 1 second. I don't know. Let's leave it for the time being, because the sugya is very long and complicated, and we'll see if we can clarify this as we go along. Ha'omer libno, the Mishnah says, konam iata nene mishali. Now there are two ways a person can impose a konam on his fellow Jew, or in this case on his own son. He can either stipulate that as long as I'm alive, you won't be able to derive any benefit from my possessions. That's called iata nene mishali. And therefore, Emes, once he dies, Yerushena, his son, can inherit these nechasim, and that neder was only chal during the life of his father, and after the death of his father, he, the son, could have benefits from the nechasim. But if, on the other hand, the father said the following, Bechayav ubimoso, that I want this konam to extend even beyond my death, then imes lo yirashenu. He's not able to inherit this land because he cannot benefit, and if he would benefit, he would violate the konam. But once again, the Mishnah offers a subterfuge. So what is this harama? What he could do is yachzir lebanov, meaning he can give up his portion to his brothers, oli echov, or his uncles, let's say if he doesn't have any brothers. And in that case, now the money goes not from the father directly to the son, but rather it goes from the rest of the Yarshim over to him. V'im elo love, and if he has no money whatsoever, so he doesn't want to give up his portion of the Yerusha because he's penniless, then love, he could borrow money. Ubali chov boim v'nifraim, and they'll come and collect from the Yerusha. And therefore, basically, he doesn't have to forfeit that money because the money goes out of the hands of the Malveh and back into the hands of the Malveh.
He's been cut out of his father's estate. Is that what the situation is?
I guess in some sense, well, you could say
that. If he's been cut out, then when the father dies, he doesn't receive anything.
Ah, so again, he's not cut out of this. The father can't be removed from him what's called the Shem Yorish. He still has rights to the Yerusha. But he's not allowed to benefit from the Yerusha. That goes through a different channel called Neder. So what do we do now? He needs desperately his Yerusha. He can't benefit from it. So the answer is we have to find some sort of a way in which he's not getting the Yerusha directly from the estate of his father, because then he's being Nene from his father. His father took a konam, even Lachamos. But we have to find a middle partner here in which the Yerusha will go to so and so, and then from so and so into the possession.
That was to help him.
To help him out, correct. And the reason we're helping him out is because he doesn't have that money. So what do we do? One of two things. Either he forfeits his portion in the Yerusha, and therefore the Yerusha now is taken over by the other Yarshin, whether they're brothers or uncles, depending upon who's in the family. And then he comes to them, and he says, well, what about my chelik and my Yerusha? So they say to him, okay, here's your chelik and Yerusha. And that they can do because it's gone through them. It's indirect. The other possibility is, he can borrow money and have the Bal Chov collect that money back so that he really never lost any money whatsoever. And then the money is going from the Bal Chov into him. So the Bal Chov now becomes the middleman.
Can he force the brothers to do that?
I assume he can. And this sounds like the Mishnah is establishing a takana for the benefit of the ben in such a situation. Okay. Now, getting back to the case of Keren v'Chomesh, where the son himself is the Gazlan, and he has to pay the Keren v'Chomesh to his father, but his father is no longer alive, so then we want to make sure that he pays the Keren v'Chomesh to the Yarshim. Let's say there are no Yarshim, so what do we do in that case? So we're going to soon see that there's one case in which a person, the Nigzal, dies and has no Yorshim. In this case, the Nigzal has one Yorish. And that one Yorish is the Gazlan himself. So again, let's not get confused with the Kohen case. The case where the Gazlan pays to the Kohen is a case where there's no Yorshim whatsoever. That's going to be the case of the Ger. But our case is where there's only one Yorish, and that's the Gazlan himself. So to whom does the Gazlan pay in such a case? Does he just toss the money from one hand, his right hand, to the left hand? That doesn't make any sense. Omar Rav Yosef, and this is, I think, the last thing we did on whenever it was, Thursday of last week, he says, Afilu li arniki shel tzedakah, that he can pay to the communal chest, And that itself is enough to achieve this goal of getting the gzela out of his hands, so that he no longer possesses the gzela or the chomesh that he has to pay. Amar Papa v'tzarach sheyomar ze gezel avi. He has to make a declaration that this money that I'm giving to tzedakah is gezel, is money that I stole from my father. Now, the Mefarshim say that this whole deal is the Rabbanan. In other words, the Chachamim are establishing this takana as a kind of kium of Hashavas HaGzela, which the Torah doesn't really recognize, because Hashavas HaGzela means to the Nigzal, and he's not paying back to the Nigzal, but there's no possibility in this case to pay the Nigzal unless he pays himself as a Yorish.
I thought that stocker is not allowed to benefit from stolen property.
Well, again, in this case, it's not really stolen property. The stolen property is gone. He's paying its value. And why is he paying his value? Because he wants to rectify his sin. So it's not really a chefta gozel. Now the Gemara says, Vamai, why does he have to pay anyone else when he himself has rights as a yoresh to inherit that money? Nimchale l'nafshe. Why can't he just say, well, look, I'm the only yoresh, and although I, as a yoresh, have a right to demand this payment, somebody owes me a chov, but since that somebody is me, myself, and I should be able to be mochel that chov. Okay, now, is there a basis, says the Gemara, for that possibility that the nigzal could be mochel, monies that are coming to him, under the law of Heshev Zagzela? Milo Tnan, and in fact we did learn this in the Mishnah back on Kuv Gimel. The Mishnah says, Machalo ala Keren, Velo Machalo ala Chomesh, that the Nigzal could be Mochel the Keren, and even if he doesn't Mochel on the Chomesh, then there won't be another Chiyuv on the Chomesh, if you remember. But in any event, what's relevant to us now is that he wiped off the chiyuv of Eishav Zagzela on the Keren itself, and that's valid. Alma bar mechilahu. You see that Gzela lends itself to mechila. And here too, in the case where a person inherits his father, so there's a chov that's owed to his father by the Gazlan. And since he is the Yoresh, who has now, in place of his father, rights to collect that chov, he could be mochel that chov. And therefore, there's no longer gzela. Once the mechila is chal, there's no longer gzela to be collected. And we've seen this already in the Mishnah, that mechila is operative on a chov. Now, keep in mind that there's one fundamental difference between the Mishnah and our case. There, in the Mishnah, the mechila, just one second, is not the mechila of the gazlan, but it's the mechila of the nigzal. Mm-hmm. Here in our case, it's the mechila of the gazlan himself. But again, the only reason for that is that since the nigzal died, and the gazlan himself inherits the chov that's owed to the nigzal, therefore he is in effect in place of the nigzal. He's also at the same time the gazlan. But the Gemara doesn't understand that there should be any fundamental difference between the Gazlan being Mochel himself and the Nigzal being Mochel a Gazlan. Because insofar as the Gazlan here is also the Nigzal, so to speak, meaning he has the Chov to collect the Hashavas HaGzela, therefore he becomes like the Nigzal, and once he's the Bailim of that Gzela to collect that Chov, he can be Mochel on that. So what the Gemara is going to do now is the Gemara is going to try to assume that whether or not the Gazlan could be Mochel on his own Chov, meaning again we're going to grant the possibility that, at least the theoretical possibility, that there's Mechila on the part of the Nigzal for Vayishev Sagzela, but we're not going to go necessarily a step further and allow for a mechila on the part of the Gazlan, who's also the Nigzal. And that all is going to depend upon a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva. Or Rabbi Yochanan, lo kasha. Ha Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Ha Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yossi HaGlil is going to advocate in favor of the validity of Mechila, and he's going to be the author of the Mishnah back on Daf Kuf Gimel, whereas Rabbi Akiva says that there's no such thing as Mechila, and therefore his opinion is reflected here in our Mishnah, which establishes that the Gazlan must pay. And if he can't pay, he has to give up the money to the Kupa, the Arniki Sheltstaka. Now keep in mind, if our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, then Lechora, the Mishnah should have told me a greater chiddush, that not only, well, actually, this is the greater chiddush, right? I guess we'll have to say it like this, that No, just the other way around. It would have been a greater chiddush. The Mishnah should have told me a greater chiddush, that even if the Nigzal and the Gazan are two different people, nevertheless the Nigzal could what? Could be Moche. I'm sorry, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Nigzal cannot be Moche. Notice, why is Rabbi Akiva telling me that the Nigzal can't be Moche to himself? Let him tell me that the Nigzal can't be Moche to someone else. Now, if the first Mishnah, back on Kuf Gimel, is authored by Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that there is Mechila, then Rabbi Yossi clearly should have told me a bigger Chiddush, that not only can the Nigzal be Mokhil to the Gazlan, but even if the Nigzal is Mokhil to himself, because the Nigzal himself is the Gazlan, even that is operative. So those are the questions that we're going to have to see as we go along. First, we'll see the Machlokas inside between Rabbi Yossi Agli and Rabbi Akiva. Disanya. Now this Brisa is interpreting the end of a long pasuk. So I'm going to read the entire pasuk. It's in Bamidbar He, and it starts the following: Ish o isha ki yasu mikol chatos ha'odem limol mal b'ashem, which is always a reference to a shvur sheker. The ashma hanefesh ahi, in other words, that sheker, that shvur was a shvur sheker. And the Torah there says that he has to pay Keren and Chomesh. V'im ein le'ish goel, now the word goel is synonymous for yoresh, so that the nigzal has no yorshim, which we're going to see is the case of Gezel Ager in just a second. Lahashiv ha'asham, in order to return the gzela, because the nigzal died and he left no yorshim. Is then the Torah says, I'll read to you the end of the pasuk, which is going to engage our minds later on. It says, "Ha'asham amushav l'Hashem la'kohen." Then, in the case of Gezel Ager, if the ger dies, then the keren and chomesh have to be paid l'Hashem, and Hashem gives it over to the kohen. So the Gemara asks the following: V'chiyesh, the price is V'chiyesh onam v'Yisrael she'ein lo galim. How could it be that somebody dies without a relative? There always is a relative somehow, somewhere on the face of the earth. We're all related to each other. If we go back to Yaakov Avinu, Ella, but rather Gezel Ager akosim b'tav. The ger has no yorshim because all his biological relatives are halachically not his relatives, and therefore his yerusha doesn't go to them. And if he has no children, then there are no yorshim. So that's what we're talking about in this parasha, and the brisa continues and says, "Harei shegazal ager v'nishpalo." If he steals from the ger and he takes a shvur that he didn't steal, and then he decides to have second thoughts and he wants to bring a kapara, but v'shama shemes ager, he heard a rumor, so to speak. We'll soon see that this rumor is not a true rumor, but he thinks that the ger died. He that's what they accidentally published an obituary about the scare. It was really someone else with it who looked similar who died, but not the ger. Anyway, Vayamala Kaspo V'ashomo Yushalayim. Now, watch this. He's bringing the Keren V'chomish, that's called Kaspo, up to Yushalayim, because there he's going to pay the Keren V'chomish to the Kohen. Again, he could find a Kohen, theoretically, in Akko or in Yafo, wherever he lives, but he's bringing it to Yushalayim, because he has to bring his carbon asham. So once he's bringing his carbon asham to Yushalayim, he's going to bring it to the Kohen. What we're going to see later on, Rabbi Osai, but we're not ready for this yet, is that he's got to pay it, the Keren V'chomesh has to be paid to a specific Kohen, or shall we say a group of, a specific unit of Kohenim, those who call the Anshei Mishmar, those who are bringing the Asham, because they're on duty during that week, they are the ones who collect the Gezel Hager, the Karen V'Chomesh that has to be paid by the Gazlan to the Kohen. Now, Poga B'Yoso Kohen, B'Yoso Hager, lo and behold, the Ger had a resurrection from the dead. He did not die. So now, what does he do? Theoretically, what he should do is, if he's holding on to the Karen V'Chomesh, he should fork it over to the Ger. But for one reason or another, he doesn't want to do that. So what does he do? V'zakfo olav b'milta. The Ger agrees that, you know what? It's as if you paid me. You didn't pay me, so you have to take it as a loan. That's called zakfo olav b'milta. And again, there are two ways of understanding the Zakfa Lav Milva. One is to say that he actually paid him, but now the Ger gives the money back to him, so to speak, as a loan. Or Zakfa Lav Milva means, you know, in lieu of the fact that you owe me this Karen V'Chomesh, it continues to be a loan, it's a Milva. Umeis. Now the Ger dies, and the Israel has not yet paid up the Karen V'Chomesh. So what does he do? So if I assume that Zakfal of the Milva is a payment in which the money went into the bank account, not physically, not in reality, but halachically, legally, into the bank account of the Ger, and then the Ger extended a loan, so Zakha Halo B'Masha B'Yodah. He's already returned the Gzela. And if he's returned the Gzela, there's no Chiv of Gzela. Ella what? He now has an outstanding loan. So the law is that if the Ger dies and there's no one to pay that loan, he doesn't have to pay that loan. The only reason he has to pay the Kohen is because of the mitzvah of Eishem Gzela. But he already fulfilled that mitzvah through the mechanism of Zakfo Olav B'Milveh. And therefore, Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it turns out that everything cancels out the chiyuv of the Karen V'Chomesh. We now have a situation in which the Gazlan has never fulfilled his mitzvah, his obligation of Hashem's like Zela, and that's fine. He's made a real killing. He has the Karen and the Chomesh in his bank account, and that's fine. And why is this so? Because the Ger basically said to him, you know what? I'm going to make it as if, I'm going to consider it as if you paid me, but you have to agree from your perspective to obligate yourself in a loan to pay up the loan. Now I have here a note on the bottom. Just give me a second here. Okay, so again, what we're saying here is that there are two categories, two different classifications of a chovas mamon. There's one chiyuv mamon on the gazlan under vehishiv zakzela. There's another chiyuv mamon under halva if he takes a loan. And then afkamin is going to be if the malve dies. In other words, if the zakol of milve is just an extension of time to pay the zela back, then the gazlan will have to pay the kohen in this case. But if the extension of time means that, all right, you don't have to pay me for the gzela, it's as if I receive payment for the gzela, but only on condition that you pay me, then the chiyuv on the part of the gazan now converts itself from that of a gzela chiyuv to a halva chiyuv. And in the case of halva chiyuv, if the malva, in this case the ger, dies, that chov is completely irrelevant. But it comes out that the way the Gemara is understanding this, if Rabbi Yossi Aglili is telling us that the Gazlan does not have to pay the Kohen in this case, why? Because Zakfal of Milvin, and the Zakfal of Milvin must be wiping out the Chiyuv Mamon B'Toras Gzela of Karen V'Chomesh, and that can only operate through the mechanism of Mechila. So it means that Rabbi Yossi embraces the possibility of Mechila in Ve'eshev Esak Zela Shar Gazal. Now, again, is this the same as the case where the Gazan is being mochel to himself? Absolutely not. This is a case where the Ger, who is in exile, is being mochel the Gazlan. So I'm not sure, and that's what the Gemara is going to attack him, and how Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to help us in our mission. Rabbi Yossi Aglili will allow for Mechilas Hashavas Hagzela in the case where there's an exile and a Gazan as two separate persona, but not necessarily in the case where it's all the same person and the Gazan is being Mochel himself. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer Ein Lo Takana, that the Gazan has to pay the Gzela. Why? Because even though there was some sort of an agreement here between the Nigzal, meaning the Ger, and the Gazlan, called Zakfal of Milvah, but nevertheless, this Gazlan never actually took the money out of his pocket and transferred it over to the hands of the Gazlan, of the Nigzal, excuse me. And therefore we see that Rabbi Yossi Aglili accepted and validated Mechila, but Rabbi Kiva doesn't validate Mechila. And if the Mechila is out of the picture, then what we have here is a Chiyuv Mamon B'Toras HaShavas HaGzela. And if he can't pay back the Ger, because the Ger is already gone, then he'll pay it over to the Kohen, and that's Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says the following. L'Rav Yossi Aglili Lo Shno L'Nafshe Lo Shno L'Acherim Matzi Mochel. The Gemara is now making a gigantic leap. And the Gemara is saying that once Rabbi Yossi Aglili validated Mechila, in the case of Ger, which is Mechila Le'acherim, meaning to a Gazlan who's a different personality, so there's a Mechila on the part of the Nigzal on behalf of the Gazlan, and they're two different people, then we're gonna jump from that to the conclusion that Mechila works on Gzela, period. Even if it's the same person, meaning the Gazlan and the Nigzal are one and the same, and basically the Nigzal is being Mochel himself, that's also an application of the same general rule of Mechila on Gzela. And there is Mechila on Gzela according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Later on, the Gemara is going to try to distinguish and say, maybe we'll insist that Rabbi Yossi Aglili only validates Mechila l'acherim, but not l'nafshe. Rabbi Akiva, lo shna l'acherim, lo shna l'nafshe, lo matzi mochel. Rabbi Akiva is totally opposed to Mechila. Rabbi Akiva does not validate Mechila to exempt the Gazlan from paying back for the Gzela. And therefore, in the case of the Ger, there's no Mechila. And how much more so in the case of the Gazlan, there's no Mechila. Says the Gemara, Ulrav Yossi, Hu adin dafilu lo zokfo b'milfa. Wait a second. Maybe Rabbi Yossi Aglili in the Brisa of Ger validated the Mechila through the process of Zokfo Olav B'milveh. Maybe Zokfo Olav B'milveh has a special status. So the Gemara says, no. How does Zokfo Olav B'milveh work? It works as a Mechila. And therefore, Hu Adin Lo Zokfo B'milveh. Meaning, if there was no Zokfo Olav B'milveh, nevertheless, there would be a possibility of Mechila. And that's critical for the Gemara to say such a thing, because again, we want to apply Rabbi Yossi Aglili not just in the case of Ger, which is explicit in the Brice, but even in the case of our Mishnah, where the Gazlan stole from his father and his father died, and now as a Yoresh, he has rights to that Chov that's owed to him by the Gazlan, and he's being mochel to himself. So that it's very critical for the Gemara to say Hu Adin Dafil Lo Zakfo B'Milveh, right? In order to assume that Rabbi Yossi Aglili would go a step further and say the Gazan could be mochel to himself, because there's no Zakfo of Milveh in the case of our mission of the Gazlan. V'Haidik Toni Zakfo of Milveh. But then the question is, why did Rabbi Yossi Aglili stipulate that he set up this halva, which means he took the gzela, you know, the money of the gzela, as a payment, and then he extended it as a loan? Well, the truth is, he just could have been mochel the chov. Why did he need this whole complicated business of zakfal of milveh? Says the Gemara, Haidik Tani zakfal of milveh lo diacha kolcho de Rabbi Akiva dafilu zakfal of milveh ein lo takona chi yotzi agzel vitachas yodo. That Rabbi Akiva rejects mechila even through the mechanics of zakfal of milveh. the zakfal of the milveh is not going to help for Rabbi Akiva to alleviate the gazlan of his responsibility to pay for the gzela. You would have thought that, okay, maybe Rabbi Akiva objects and rejects mechila, that can't operate, but let him operate through the principle of zakfal of the milveh, which makes it like a quasi-piron, as if to say that the monies of the gzela were actually transferred from the gazlan over to the nigzal, over to the ger, and then the ger extended a loan. No. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva, even in a case of zakfal of milveh, even though it really looks like a payment, nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva has an absolute principle that the gazlan must pay the gzela. He cannot benefit from the gzela and have money of gzela in his bank account. Okay, now the Gemara says the following: Maskif le Rav Sheshes Yehok. If you're telling me that Rav Yossi Aglili is the author of the Mishnah back on Daf Kuf Gimel, validating Mechila in the case of Hashavas Agzela, is Rabbi Yossi Aglili Lashmiina Lenafshe, because Shein Lacher, he should have told me a bigger chiddush, that not only is Mechila valid vis-a-vis the Gazlan when the Nigzal is a different personality, but even if they're all the same person, nevertheless, Mechila is meaningful to remove any obligation on the part of the Gazlan to pay the Karen V'Chomesh. In other words, our rule of thumb is that we always want the Mishnah to tell me the greater chiddush, and then we'll be able to derive the lesser chiddush by human logic, so that there are two ways and two scenarios in which the gazlan could be exempt from the chiyuv tashlume gzela. One is if he's mochel to himself, in the case where he was the gazlan and he's the yoresh. And the second is mechilas hanigzal la gazlan, in the case of the brisa of ger. And the Gemara thinks that according to Rav Yossi, there would be a greater chiddush in the case of lenafshe. In other words, if he's being mochel to himself, because in that case, there really is no mechila. I mean, the chov is owed to the yorish. The yorish himself is the one who owes the chov. So I don't even know if you need a mechanics of mechila. What would you say about the following, logically? If somebody owes me a chov, but that somebody is me. So do I have to be mochel him, who is me? In other words, it's a meaningless chov, because this chov cannot be collected. What Rabbi Yossi should have been mechadish to me, that when there is a mechila, which the Torah in general recognizes, that there's one chov that doesn't lend itself to mechila. That's the chov of Vaheshem Sagzela Sher Gaza. It would have been a greater chiddush then for Rabbi Yossi to tell me, in the case of Lacherim, where there is a mechila, that the mechanics of mechila doesn't operate. The Gemara asks the same question on Rabbi Akiva, in the opposite direction. Rabbi Akiva, in our Mishnah, if Rabbi Akiva says that Mechila is totally inoperative, Lishma'inan, the Lacherim lo matzi machil, let him tell me the bigger Chiddush, that even where there is a Mechila, the Mechila is inoperative and invalid. Bekolshkin, and how much more so would I understand that Lenafshe lo matzi machil, where there really is no Mechila? Elomer of Sheshes, therefore of Sheshes. Now, watch what's going to happen here. At this fork in the road, there are two ways we can go. We can either say that both Mishnayos are authored by Rabbi Yossi Aglili, or that both Mishnayos are authored by Rabbi Akiva. But to split the two, the Gemara says, according to Rav Sheshes, is impossible. So we're going to have now Rav Sheshes' way of working out these two Mishnayos, and then Rav's way of working out. In Rav Sheshes' way, we're going to talk about Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And now we're going to have a very logical presentation, because Rabbi Yossi Aglili, although he validates Mechila, but in our Mishnah there is no Mechila. And if there was no Mechila to operate here, then Lamaisa, you never really undermine or negate the Chovas Ve'eshev Esak Zeh L'Sher Gaza. So he says, Hava Ha both Mishnayis are authored by Rav Yossi HaGlili, but Kikom Rav Yossi HaGlili de Matzi Machil. When does Rav Yossi HaGlili validate Mechila Lacherim? That's a real Mechila. Like, for example, in the Brisa of Ger, the Ger, since he was Zokef all of the Milveh, was Mochel the Tashlume Be'eshev Sagzil to the Gazlan. Aval Enafshe Lo Matzi Machil. But if the Gazlan and the Nigzal are one and the same, that's already not Mechila. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili says that that's not valid. The Gazlan never experienced, so to speak, a Mechila. Mechila means as if the money was paid up. Right? That's what Mechila means. You know, you don't have to bother paying me, but it's as if I received the money. That's not so in the case where the Gazlan was the Nigzal. And the Nigzal and the Gazlan are one and the same. Ela amai zocha love b'masha biyado. Oh. So now you'll ask me, well, what about in the case of Ger, Ger Shemes? There we said that the Nigzal doesn't have to pay. And the answer is because the Bryce itself is talking about a case where there was Mechila. How do we know there was Mechila? Because zocha hala b'masha biyado. Because when the Gazlan came with the money and he approached the Nigzal, who's the Ger, and he said to him, here, I'm ready to pay you, then at this point, the Gazlan has basically transferred the money over to the Nigzal, and the Ger has received that money, so the payment of the Gzela is complete. Mishum de Zokfan all of the Milva, just that the Ger, in this case the Nigzal, stipulated that he wants a repayment. Okay, fine, that's a loan. That's called Zokfan Olav B'Milveh. But that doesn't prove anything about the case where the Gazan and the Nigzal are one and the same. There is no operation of the mechanics of Zokfan Olav B'Milveh, and therefore the Gazan has to pay. So it comes out that both Mishnayis are authored by Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, but Rabbi Yossi HaGlili only accepts and validates Mechila for Tashlume Gzela in the case where there are two persona. There's the Nigzal and the Gazlan. The Nigzal is being Mochel to the Gazlan. In the case of the Ger and the Brisa, Enochinami, the Nigzal was Mochel to the Gazlan through the mechanics of Zokfan Olav B'Milveh. Rava Amar Hava Ha Rabbi Akiva. Rava would rather prefer to say that both Mishnayis are authored by Rabbi Akiva. Again, in the case of our Mishnah, the Gazlan cannot be Mochel to himself, so that's Rabbi Akiva. Which means that, according to Rava, probably Rabbi Yossi HaGlili would insist that there is such a thing as being Mochel to yourself, even in Tashlume Gzela. Oh, but now we have to go back to the Mishnah in Kuf Gimel. There, Mechila operates. That's only l'nafshi aval acherim matzi machil. For the chov of tashlume gzeil to be wiped off simply because the gazlan is the yoresh of the nigzal, that Rabbi Akiva rejects. But if the gazlan and the nigzal are two different people and the nigzal wants to be mochel to the gazlan, that mechila is operative. It's a complete valid mechila. And it works. Now, what about the case of Ger in the Brisa? There we said that if it was Zokfa Olav B'Milveh, then the Gazlan does not have to pay the Kohen after the death of the Ger. Why is that so according to Rabbi Akiva? No. The answer is that in the case of the Ger, Rabbi Akiva said, What was the language of Rabbi Akiva? Let's just reread it. He says, "Ein lo takana shiyotzi gzeila mitachas yado." The Rabbi Akiva insists that he does have to pay the gzeila. And why does he have to pay the gzeila? Because Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that Zokfan Olav Milveh is not a mechila. Again, Rabbi Akiva accepts and validates mechila la'acherim, but in the case of the Ger, he never actually was mochel. Basically, when the Ger was Zokef Olav Milveh, he said to him, you know what? You owe me the Gzela. You don't want to pay it now. Pay it to me in a month. He basically gave him an extension of time to pay for the Gzela. And therefore, there never was a Mechila on the Gzela. So we basically I have three different Tanaic literature here. You know, we have two Mishnayos and a Brice, and they all fit into one pattern of Shitas Rabbi Akiva. The Mishnah back on Kuf Gimel is authored by Rabbi Akiva, namely that there is Mechila between the Gaz and the Nigzal. The Brice says that the Ger Nigzal was never Mochil, he was only Zakhvel and Milvi, gave him an extension of time to pay the Gzela. And our mission is Rabbi Akiva, who does not accept and validate a Mechil Lenafshe, which means that since the Gazlan has to pay, no one was Mochil him, and therefore he has to give the money over to the other Yarshim. Okay, then now we turn to Daf Kuf Testament Beis, Michalal. Now let's analyze Rava. Rava is telling us and presenting the cogent Shita of Rabbi Akiva. What can we derive from Rava with regard to Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Michlal, Rabbi Yossi Aglili sovar de afilu l'nafshe nami machil. If our Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Tes is authored by Rabbi Akiva, it means that Rabbi Yossi Aglili would let the Gazlan off the hook. And the reason for that is because he himself is the only Yoresh. He inherits this chov from his father, and he is also the Gazlan to pay up the chov. So he can be Mochel himself. You don't even need Zakav Alav Milva. Ela Ger Hagar. I'm sorry, El Gezel Ager, Dikam Rachmona. What do we do with the case of Gezel Ager, where the Torah says that you have to pay the Kohen if the Ger, the Nigzal, dies? This is the scene of the Kohen. Hechi Mishkachasla. In what scenario, in what reality can we imagine that the Gazlan is going to have to pay, is going to have to pay to the Kohen? Because according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, since Mechila is operative, so what, well, just give me a second here, what happens is that when the Ger dies, when the Ger dies, then basically, where is the money that has to be paid to this Ger? Where is it in the universe? It's in the hands of the Gazlan. Well, the Gazlan, therefore, was Kone this money from Hefker. Because again, any money that was owned, that was owned and possessed by the Ger in his lifetime, with his death, it's Hefker, and anyone who's holding on to it, it's his. So in this case, the Gazlan is holding on to the money of the Gzela, and it's his. And that's no different than a Yoresh. And therefore, since according to Rabbi Yossi, is afil l'nafshe nami mochil, based on the principle of Rabbi Yossi, the Gazlan would never have to pay the Kohen, because he's holding on to the Gzela. When does the Torah, according to Rabbi Yossi, require that the Gazlan pay up to the Kohen? Kishagazal es hager v'nishpalo. The Gazlan stole it from the Ger, and obviously the Ger was alive. During the lifetime of the Ger, he sued the Gazlan for Gzela, and the Gazlan took a Shvur. Then Umeis HaGer, the Ger died, but when does the Gazlan decide that he wants to rectify his sin and confess his crime? Hodol Yachamisa. Ah, that's the third element necessary to incur the chiyuv of Keren v'Chomesh, and of course Asham. So we have now three elements. We have the fact that he stole it, plus the fact that he took a shvur sheker, and finally, you know, to clinch it, the hodah. But that hodah, which clinches the chiyuv of Keren v'Chomesh and Asham, that took place liachamisa. Is therefore the Gemara says, "Dibeidna diodi," at the time when the hodah took place, which is after the misa of the ger, kno Hashem unesano lakanim. In such a case, the chiyuv of the heishiv is like zela, which cannot, right, in terms of the rectification of that sin on the part of the Gazlan, cannot be fulfilled vis-a-vis the Nigzal, because the Nigzal died without Yorshim is a ger. So in this case, the Torah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is Kohen of the Gzela. And he's not, we're not going to pay HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't need the money anyway. So Nisan al Kohen, Hashem says, give it over to the Kohen. So again, if the Hodah took place while the Ger was alive, then it becomes a milveh. And when the Ger dies, the Gazlan is Mochel himself, so to speak, because he now, in a sense, is in the place of the Ger, because he's holding on to the money, and the money is Hefker, so he was Konim in a Hefker, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yosef Lili, that's like the case of Mochel and Afshi. He doesn't have to actually take money out of his pocket to pay if he inherits that money in any event. I don't mean inherit literally, but I mean say that he possesses it. So when did the Torah require that the Gazlan pay the Kohen? And that's only if the Hodah took place after the death of the Ger. And therefore the Chiyuv was incurred after the Ger was already dead. There's no removal of that Chiyuv. But to whom does that Chiyuv have to be paid? And the answer is, Beshashim Sakzela now is to Hashem, who gave it over to the Kohen. Boy Ravina, Gezel Hagioris. Mahu. What happens if a person takes a shvur sheker about gzela, denying his gzela to a gioris? Mahu. Ish amar achmona lo velo isha. Okay, now we have to go back to the, let's go back to the pasuk here. The pasuk says, im ein la ish goel. So the Gemara says that wherever it says Ish, we derive Ish below Isha, and let's apply that rule here. Again, we have to see what logic there would be to say that an Isha is different than an Ish, but be that as it may. So the Gemara says, O Dilma, perhaps, Urche de Krohu. In this case, the Torah is only using the general case. And really, in truth, the word Ish is not coming to exclude Isha. And therefore, even in the case of stealing from an Isha, the same din applies that the Gzela, if she dies, has, in the case of Yoris, has to be forfeited to the Kohanim, has to be forked over to the Kohanim. And the Gemara now, in the name of Ravina, presents this suffix. How do we interpret the word Ish? Is it Bedafka in the parasha of Gezla Ger paying to the Kohen? Amalei Rav Aaron le Ravina. Very rare, by the way, Aaron. Even though today every other person I know is an Aaron. In my Ksubas class, I have three people in the name Aaron. But in the Gemara, Aaron is a pretty rare name. I don't know why. Anyway, Amalei Aaron leRavina Toshma Desanya. It says in a Braisa. Now this Braisa again is interpreting the pasuk in Ein LeIsh Goel, and the pasuk then says, Lahashiv ha'asham elav. He doesn't have a way of returning the keren and the chomesh. Ha'asham amushav l'ashem l'kohen. That asham, which refers to the keren and gzela, keren and chomesh, should return to the Hashem who gives it over to the kohen. But what's the word hamushav? That's an extra word. Okay, we'll see. So the Brisa says the following: Ish ein li ela ish. Isha minayin. How do we know that the din of paying the Kohen, that the Gazlan pays his gzela to the Kohen, applies even in the case of a Gioris? Kishu Omer Hamushav, the extra word Hamushav. And why is the word Hamushav extra? Because the beginning of the pasuk says Lahashiv. So you're just repeating basically the same word in a different conjugation. Harekan Shnayim. In other words, there's a Hashava to the Ish at the beginning of this pasuk, Lahashiv. And now Hamushav is the second Hashofa, and that's coming to include an Isha. Nuim Kain Matam Alomar Ish. You got to derive something from the word Ish. And the answer is Ish Atatzorach Lachzor Achrov Im Yeshlo Goalim Im Lav. Okay, now sometimes the word Ish excludes Isha. But that's not always an ironclad rule, because sometimes the word Ish comes to exclude a Katan. And here the Bryce is applying that rule, that the Ish is coming to exclude a Katan. And why is that so? the ger died. How old is this ger? So we have a sugya in Masechta Ksubos that there's something called a ger katan. Okay? Are you familiar with that? I mean, how that works is a whole sugya. But under certain conditions, Beis Din could be Megayer a katan. And the Torah wants to know, what if you stole from this katan? And the katan dies. Do you have to pay the kohen?
How does the katan have anything to steal from?
And does he have mammon to steal from? Yeah. Well, he inherited money from his goyim. So that's his money. So now, the question is, what is the pasuk? Ish coming? Ish. In the case of Ish, you want to know whether or not he has relatives. You have to figure it out. Maybe he has children. And until we clarify that he does not have children, then you don't pay the kohen. But in the case of a katan, i'ata tzorech lachzor achra. In the case of a katan, you have every reason to assume he has no children. It's therefore it's biyodua. You don't need this drisha v'chakira to establish she'en lo goalim. So there are two notes here on the bottom that I circled here. Let me just see. Ketzad Yitochen, he says, Chiyuv ze beger katan. Hare achiyuv beger katan. I'm sorry. He's saying the following. In every case of shvua, where the gazan takes a false shvua to the nigzal, it's based on a tvir. That I come with a tain against the gazlan, and he takes the shvua. But we have a rule, which we're going to get to later on in Daf Kuf Yud, Ein nishbaim al tainas katan. And in this case, where he stole, the gadol stole for a katan, how could there be a shvua at all? And if you'll say that the shvua was taken under his own initiative by the gazlan, then he's not chayev keren v'chomesh and osham in that case. So Tosfos, not here but in Sanhedrin, gives the following answer. He says that an eid echad, one witness, came to testify on behalf of the katan. And the din is, this is gigantic machlokas rishonim, that an eid echad could be mechayev a shvua even without a tvir. Even if, let's say, he's testifying on behalf of Reuven, that Shimon owes Reuven money, and Reuven doesn't know anything about it, Shimon will still have to take a shvua to be makish the eid echad. So even if the tvias katan, the tiny katan, is not enough to generate a shvua, but nevertheless, since the eid echad tells us that this gazlan stole it, therefore he has to take a shvua. Now, Tosfos Dibra Maskil Katan, I think, is going to ask your question, Michael. How is it that this Katan owns money? Minayin yeh leger Katan Mamon. So he says the following. There's a Sugya Masechta Kiddushin that says that once he becomes a ger, then he's not Yoresh, his father, who's a goy. So that's the exact opposite of what I told you before. Yeah, yeah. I forgot already about this Gemara Kiddush, which I prepared a week ago. It takes me a week to forget a Gemara. Some people forget it in a month, some people forget it in a week, some people forget it in a day, and some even less. So it took me a week. Anyway, so Gemara says in Kiddushin that Ein Katan Yoresh es Aviv HaGoy. Okay, that's in the case of Gerus. So Tosfos answers that there's something called Das Acheres Maknilo. Have you ever heard of that? That means that a gadol could be maknis something to a katan. And he's kona, the katan is kona d'oraisa. This is a famous problem of a lulav, right? A lulav on the first day where you need lochem, and you give it to the katan, and then before you, and he can't get it back from the katan. The Rashba, however, gives another answer. Okay, the Rashba says that how do we have a ger katan that inherits money, and he has money, and then you stole from this ger katan? He says it's a case where his parents were misgayer, and the leda, the birth took place after the gerus, and therefore he yarshins his parents.
He's not a ger.
Oh, is he a ger, is he not? So the truth is that what I thought is that he's a ger if his conception took place before the gerus, because you need horos of leidos of kedusha. But I don't know, for some reason here, which confuses me, he quotes the Rashba saying that if his parents are misgayer, even though it was horos of leidos of kedusha, so after they were misgayer, they conceived this baby, that itself gives him the status of a ger. But he yarshins them because the moment he was born, he's related to them. I don't understand exactly why the Rashba insists that he has the status of a ger who is both harasav and hidasav and kedusha. That I don't know. Okay, we'll just at least read the next the introduction to the next sugya, and then we'll stop. We'll stop for mincha. Tana Rabbanan Lashem LaKohen. The pasuk says Ha'osham Hamushav Lashem LaKohen. In this case of a ger, Kno Hashem. First, Hashem acquires it, and then Unesano LaKohen, and which Kohen? It's LaKohen Li Oso Mishmar. Right, the Beis Hamikdash was operated by 24 mishmaros, and each mishmar got 2 weeks during the course of the year—a week here and a week there—and the money has to be paid of this gzela to the Kohen who's in that mishmar. In fact, that's the Kohen who's going to actually be makriv the Korban Asham, and we're going to soon see an entire sugya in the next Mishnah, that the money of the Keren HaKodesh is first paid, and then the Kohen brings the Asham. If, for example, he pays the Keren HaKodesh to one Kohen, and another Kohen does the Avodah of the Korban Asham, then that's not going to work. Okay, and it's very interesting that the Brisa goes out of its way to insist that HaKadosh Baruch Hu first makes a kinyan on this Tashlume Gzela. And Tosfos, not here, but in Masechta Zvachim, has a discussion, Mainaf Gemina, why do we have to have that Hashem is Kona, and then Hashem gives it over to the Kohen. So Bli Neder, we'll get back to that, Yimirtz Hashem, next week. Ata Omer L'Kohen Sheba Oso Mishpar Eino Elo L'Chol Kohen Sheyirtzek Shu Omer Milvad Ela Kippur Meshe Yechupar Olov Yechupar Olov Harei L'Kohen Sheba Oso Mishmar Akosuv Midam. Right. So it means that there's a connection here between the payment of the Keren V'Chomish and the Korban. And that linkage tells me that you pay the Keren V'Chomish to that Kohen who's in charge of the Korban. Okay, so that's
without the other.
What do you say?
Can you have one without the other?
No. So you can't have one without the other. That's going to be the sugya that we're going to remit to Shem approach next time.